Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Mike Braden. Go by SEC Mike. Go on the Twitters. And there he is, our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how are you, my friend?
Mike, trying to survive the long, hot, humid summer before we get to media days, the video game release. We got the Athlon magazine on the newsstand, so I guess it's not too quiet out there, but it's still a little lonely in these college football world, right?
Oh, it is, but I've got my Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine to keep me company, Stephen. So for all the cousins out there, I know you've told them before, but can you remind them where can they get their copy so that they can enjoy the summer like I am?
Yeah, I will say it's kind of like my official, like unofficial, I guess, start of like the countdown to the season when that magazine is on the newsstands. Really, the best place is athlonsports.com because you go there, magazines at the very top, and we can ship you the one of the two. We have two different SEC covers, and if you desire, we have the Big 10, Big 12, ACC. If you want Bill Belichick on the cover, we got that one for you too. So athlonsports.com is the best place. If you want to get it like at the newsstand, it seems like bookstores and Publix is the best place to get them. That's where I've had the most luck, or other people telling me they're seeing them out there. So on newsstands right now. And if anybody has any questions or has any trouble ordering, let me know. Hit me up on the social media there.
Any truth to the rumors that Belichick's girlfriend had to approve the photo before Athlon ran it?
Not yet. I'm surprised, honestly. Now that you, I didn't really think about that. Now that you mentioned, I am a little surprised that we didn't get an email from maybe the second important Jordan there in North Carolina.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, speaking of, you know, we got to get approval for some things here, Stephen. Again, this is rumors and speculations. We're going to get into show topic for today. We're going to rank the offensive position groups in the SEC, best running back group, receiver group, tight end group, offensive line group. But before we do that, Stephen, I wanted to ask you, because there was some pretty interesting news via Bruce Feldman of The Athletic. He does a heck of a job. But he wrote an article on Lenore Sellers, Stephen, who may very well be the best quarterback in the conference, if not the country, this year, if last year gives us any indication on what a streak the Gamecocks went on. But according to Bruce Feldman, well, according to Sellers' dad, who relayed this to Bruce Feldman, that his son was offered $8 million in NIL for 2 years. So $4 million per. First of all, what's your thoughts on that? And do you buy it?
I definitely buy it. So I think if you kind of look at the market for transfer quarterbacks, Duke's Darian Mensah, he transferred from Tulane to Duke. He got $4 million from Duke to transfer in. So 2 years, $8 million kind of would be a similar deal. Honestly, that's actually a little bit low for Lenore Sellers. Like personally, I mean, if Darian Mensah is getting four, isn't like Lenore Sellers worth more than that? Because he could be the best quarterback in the country this year. So I definitely believe it. You're seeing this every year where quarterbacks, the dollar values for these guys are just, you know, in the $4 to $5 million range for high values. We've seen what's been thrown out there for Carson Beck. So I believe it. None of it surprises me. And honestly, I think that's an underpay for Lenore Sellers.
Yeah, I think he's worth every penny, whatever the heck they're paying him down in Columbia. It's probably not enough. Just like we don't pay this guy, but we should, Stephen. Cousin JR, back again with another donation, another episode. Sometimes I jump on here and do emergency, and JR's already donated before the emergency happens. So
legend, cousin JR has done it again.
We appreciate you, buddy. What a legend you are, JR. This time, how interesting is this, Stephen? JR, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame College Football has been gifted a membership courtesy of JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
So Hall of Fame, welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend, JR. Man, what a guy. What a guy, Steven.
We're going to do position rankings, Mike, but I mean, do we need to, I mean, JR should be first in all of these, right? I mean, Cousin Hall of Fame, SEC Podcast Hall of Fame. Number one in all those, right?
If we could get that, we would get in a lot of trouble. But yeah, we could rank the Cousins, but that may have to be an after hours when we have some booze in us or something like that. You know what?
Can that also coincide with like Cousin Shane ranking Cracker Barrel like plates there?
Oh, he is. Maybe I shouldn't spill the beans here, but he may be working on something just very similar to that. So be on the lookout for Cousin Shane, his YouTube. Let's plug it's Cousin Shane SEC, I think is what it is. But he's got that in the works. Let's just say that.
I was at Cracker Barrel last week, Mike, and I mentioned Cousin Shane, and I didn't get the Cousin Shane discount. They just handed me the full bill, and they're like,
hey, shout out to Michael Dunlap. He just gave us $5, Steven. He says, according to Michael Dunlap here, Cousin Michael, Auburn is allegedly the one that threw $8 million at Lenore Sellers. So I'd buy that too, because, man, if they had Lenore Sellers, I might pick them to be a playoff team. I know they're happy with their quarterbacks, but they were desperate for a quarterback before they got Jackson Arnold.
Mike, I think if Auburn had Lenore Sellers, the first thing that went into my mind was like, top 15 team. I mean, if you kind of do the big picture thinking on this, like you would be replacing one of Auburn's biggest questions with potentially certainly I think top five quarterback could be the best quarterback in the country. That would not surprise me at all for that to be true, just given the, I would say, desperation of Auburn's quarterback search the last couple of years, the play, trying to find an answer for this year, but also potentially for next year, if you could convince Lenore Sellers to stick around. So I think all that that adds up, doesn't it?
I think so. And I think it was wise of Sellers, if Auburn was indeed the one, and I have no clue, but if it was Auburn, I think it was smart to turn down that money just because he don't want to get blamed by Hugh Freeze, you know, like all the other quarterbacks. But All right, let's move on, Steven. I told you I got a curveball for you. Last night, we ranked best home field advantages in the SEC. And again, this is for currently, not 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, not all time, but currently the best home field's advantages, essentially the most daunting places to play in the SEC. I want to throw at you my top four, and feel free to rip this to shreds or let me know what I got wrong here. I got Florida number one. I don't think there's anywhere tougher to play than the Swamp right now. And I think their recent record and the caliber of their team kind of indicates that. Tennessee at night, just Tennessee in general, has become a house of horrors for damn near everybody except for Georgia. LSU, I still got them as elite of elite at number three. And then Georgia, I think, has climbed. And I think they have one of the most advantageous home fields in college football now, but I would not have said that just a couple years ago, but I think Georgia has risen to those ranks. What's your thoughts on this top four?
Mike, you know, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is just how loaded kind of the SEC is with great like home field atmospheres, like what it could mean in a certain like situation. Like we look at South Carolina, the night games and the impact some of those could have like in a top 10, top 15 kind of matchup. You also have that. You also have like Alabama and Georgia. Like, is the home field good or the team's just been really, really good? Like it's hard to kind of separate what exactly which kind of factors you're looking for here. Honestly, when you said that, my mind immediately went to LSU probably has the best home field advantage there. So I would probably go Florida, LSU, 1 and 2. I probably would bump Tennessee down a spot, but not by much. And I think when you get into that next tier, like all these seem like top 15 places to me. Like I mentioned, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Alabama too, as well. There's a lot of elite home field advantages here in the conference. So I don't think that's too far off, but I might have LSU a spot or two higher.
Yeah. Well, the Cousins hate it, so maybe I hate it, but
what's the biggest complaint on that one?
Probably Florida at number one. But again, I think this is a good indication here, Steven. Florida, technically of just the schools that have been in the SEC the last 6 years, they ranked fourth in home field. And I'd say their team was about 12th.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've been so good, you could give Missouri, I think, deserves a lot more respect. Now, Tennessee's far down the list, but this is just the last 6 years. The last three or four, they have been damn near unbeatable at home. Again, aside from Georgia, who Georgia beats everybody. But, yeah, I think Florida's so high, but I don't know. I just think we have seen so many times a team go into the swamp that had no business losing, yet they find ways to lose. Now, you could easily spin it because people said, well, Miami went in there and whooped them. Texas A&M went in there and whooped them last year. That's accurate. Neither one of those was at night. And also, Billy Napier is still their coach. So I blame that old Billy, who's far from an elite game day coach. You know what?
I think your assessment kind of at the records is spot on. That if Florida's home field advantage being that good, given that they are not the Urban Meyer kind of national championship caliber program the last couple of years, I think speaks volume to that home field advantage. So I've always think, like, and go back to last year, I mean, they picked off Ole Miss, they picked off LSU at the end of the year. They were obviously playing a lot better in November than they were in September. So I think that kind of speaks to when things are going well. And they haven't been. They've still been good at home. When things are going well, it sort of speaks to kind of where, how, where you got them. They could be the toughest, certainly in the SEC, given how good they can be, and they haven't played up to that potential.
Hey, shout out Hall of Fame. He gave us another $5 donation, Stephen. Well, since I was so fortunate, it allowed me to pay it forward and say Auburn should have paid Sellers $10 million. They're still desperate with Jackson Arnold. Again, his comment, not mine. We do appreciate the comment, but there may be some truth to that one. You know what?
I think there's a lot of truth in that, just because Auburn's biggest question this year still remains the quarterback position. It is the biggest wild card in the SEC. And if you could write a check big enough to get one of the top five quarterbacks in the country, you do it. But Mike, to your point, if you're one like Lenore Sellers, why also leave a pretty good situation at South Carolina? Even if you have some concerns at receiver and new OC, you also have to factor in your ability to get the bus driven over you and being blamed for the first time things go wrong too. Like, that counts in the value too.
Yep, no doubt. All right. Hey, one other thing that we're trying to do weekly. Thankfully, Shane and I remembered this week. Steven remembered. He remembers every week. He's a true professional. We're going to do Steven's weekly bold prediction right after this. All right, Steven. So what is your weekly bold prediction?
Mike, I'm going to take a bold prediction on Oklahoma. They have three road games against potential top 25 teams, Alabama, Tennessee, and South Carolina. I am going to take a bold prediction for the Sooners to win one of those games. I'm going to say Tennessee's probably most likely, followed by South Carolina. I think Alabama's probably third of that mix, but I'm gaining some confidence in Oklahoma, so I'm going to put my hand a little bit more on the burner and take Oklahoma to win one of those road games that they will probably be an underdog in this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, people might be saying, well, that's not very bold, but it's just so hard to win on the road in this conference. And it's very easy to sit here and say, well, heck, they beat Alabama. Again, that was a home game. But you take care of your road games. And, you know, we're not even counting Texas in this, but let's say you, and again, this is not a given either, but you take care of all your your home games, which I think are all winnable. Not saying you're going to win them all, but let's say you do. So that's seven. Temple's an easy one, I would think. Eight. Steven is giving you at least one more. Nine. And that's if you lose to Texas, which I think you could compete with Texas. Who knows? But a 9-win season is potentially what we're looking at if they can win one of those road games. And I know Oklahoma fans, they want to win the SEC, they want to win the national championship, but going from 6-9, that would be a serious, serious elevation under Brett Venables.
Absolutely. I mean, just given the factors that this team is dealing with and going into 2025, a coach on the hot seat, kind of uncertain direction after last year's offensive debacle. Now, I think they're kind of on the right track with what they've been able to do. But, you know, looking at their schedule, Mike, if they can get past, I know Michigan and Auburn loom very large in the first, you know, kind of section of the season. Both those games are at home. If you can get both those games, you're going into Texas undefeated. Then you've got some tough road trips to South Carolina, Tennessee, and Alabama. But those are in the second half of the season. And I think by then, Oklahoma should have a much better kind of identity. They should know a lot more about where this team is, given all the new pieces on offense. So that's kind of why I think this team might be trending up as the season goes along. And that's kind of why I think they pick off one of those road games. So taking care of business at home gets you to that 6.5 kind of win total, but picking off a road game or two gets you into that conversation to potentially be a playoff team if you can maybe pull off another upset. So that would be a massive step forward. I know it's not super, super bold, but I do think Oklahoma gets one of those road games this year.
Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, we just had the 1 year of the 12-team playoff, and what it taught us apparently was you got to have 10 wins. You got to be 10-2 to make the college football playoff. But again, that was just 1 year, of data. And I'm not saying Oklahoma's in at 9-3, but if this schedule, which on paper is one of the toughest in the country, if it remains so essentially, you know, there's some several elite potential teams on here. If Oklahoma goes 9-3 with an elite schedule, I think a case could be made to put them in as as one of the final teams. I mean, is that fair?
I think that's completely fair. And I think if you were to just sketch out what a 9-3 could look like, let's just say if they lose to Texas, let's say if they lose at Alabama, and let's say they lose to South Carolina, no shame in any of those losses. And you'd have to factor that probably all those are top 10 or top 15 teams. So then Michigan's probably going to be better this year. That's a top 15 win. You know, Auburn could be ranked, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Missouri, LSU, like all those teams could be ranked. So your three losses could be to top 15 opponents and you would have top 25 wins. So I know, I think 10-2 is definitely that barrier that you want to be at, but at that schedule, and this goes back to, I think what we saw this at the spring meetings at SEC, like how do you quantify hard schedules and some of these teams like in Indiana who didn't have a hard schedule. But I think that if that is the schedule and you're getting to 9-3 with losses to top 10 teams, I think that is very playoff worthy.
I think we'll be looking back at that damn Indiana team and how the hell they get in there. But yeah, cakewalk of the Big Ten. That's how they got it in there. Hey, shout out Michael Dunlap. He gave us another $5, Steven. He wants another $5 for my Gamecocks to jump the line for the fall preview. And then this another one of our favorite cousins here, Steven, is Jesse. He's a wild man down there. He's also a Gamecock. So he gave us $5. So South Carolina fans have donated $15. We appreciate you guys. So right now, South Carolina next in line to get a fall preview at the end of the week. We've already committed to doing Ole Miss tomorrow. We committed to doing Texas the day after. But right now, because South Carolina's in the lead right now with $15 of donations, looks like we're going to be doing the Gamecocks unless anybody can beat it. So,
Mike, if I could, I just wanted to say how excellent those previews are, just as a fan and just kind of adding to the library of content of information. So if you haven't watched them, I would really encourage it. And also, by the way, loved the bold prediction for Ahmad Hardy to lead the SEC in rushing too.
Yeah, I paid Steven to say all that. Thank you, my friend.
that's a bold one. And I know we'll get into running backs. Running back's an interesting position this year in the SEC. I think there was three 1,000-yard rushers in the conference last year, which is down. So we'll see what happens this year.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. And maybe we should start right there with a running back, Steven, just because you kind of teed that up perfectly. But Steven and I have ranked the top five position groups at each offensive position group. So we're going to go running backs first. And I say we do this in reverse order, if that makes sense, Steven. So we start at five, work our way down to one. And then are there any that I have a category here as well that's just missed the cut, so didn't quite make that top five. Can you give me your just missed the cut?
I have quite a few for running backs, given that there's quite a bit of talent at this position. But I wanted to mention two that I would not rank sixth here, but Mississippi State and Kentucky. I just think, you know, given kind of where these two teams are, I like Mississippi State and Kentucky's running backs. Mississippi State especially getting Fluff Bothwell, definite all-name teamer, but also even better game from South Alabama. I think those two running back groups are probably underrated. On the closer two, they just missed the top five. Alabama would be in that conversation. Also, LSU, Harlan Berry, Caden Durham. Really interested to see that pairing. And then Missouri with Ahmad Hardy. I love the potential here, but he hasn't done it in the SEC, and there's also not a lot of proven depth either. So they just missed my top five.
Interesting. Well, one you didn't reference is on my just missed the cut, Stephen, was Tennessee with Peyton Lewis, who's not got a significant amount of snaps because they had the outstanding Dylan Sampson last year. Deshaun Bishop, he got some run last year. I think he's got a lot of talent. So I think those... each of those guys, permitted they stay healthy, of course, you know, they'll have really good years for Tennessee. I would put Tennessee into that discussion of just missed the cut, because I would assume they didn't quite make your top five this year.
That's right. They did not make my top five. Also throw in Star Thomas transferring in. It feels like there may not be a Dylan Sampson here, but it also feels like a really solid top to bottom group this year for Tennessee.
Yep. All right. So who is your... number five?
The Oklahoma Sooners. I'm a big fan of Jaden Ott. He comes over from California, a dynamic all-around playmaker at Cal. I hope Oklahoma's offensive line is playing a lot better this year, because I think Mateer and Ott could be just a fun, dynamic all-around backfield. So that playmaking ability, he could be a 200-plus carry kind of player. To me, he's one of the best running backs already in the SEC. So I'm taking Oklahoma because of Jaden Ott, and also Taylor Tatum, Xavier Robinson. They've got pretty good depth here as well.
Steven, you're way off a mark. Come on. Give me Sooners. I put them number two. Because of the, again, Jaden Ott was not fantastic last year. He was banged up. But 2 years prior, from what I understand, he was pretty awesome. This is, for me, is more of a depth piece, because I think we go potentially four deep at the running back position at Oklahoma of potential standout performers. I don't know that we have four like this anywhere else in the conference.
It is hard to rank these, isn't it? Like, given star power and versus maybe a little bit more depth, isn't it? Like, that's something I kind of struggled with. Is that a fair question, I think?
Oh, yeah. And you could split, you know, one position group, maybe they got some star power, but they don't have the depth. And then we do that, you know, so it's however you want to do it. I'll put the Sooners number two. I forgot you hated the Sooners, but we don't hate J-Mad. J-Mad just became a member of the channel. Welcome to the family, J-Mad.
Welcome to the family.
We appreciate you, buddy. All right. Who is your number four running back group in the SEC, Steven?
And here I was thinking I was too high on Oklahoma at five. So I love that you have my two. I got Georgia at four. This is a little bit of potential. I just think that Georgia's got to get back to running the ball better. And I know that's like simple to say, but seeing Georgia at 15th in the SEC in rushing offense is almost like mind-blowing to me, given how successful they've been at running it over the years and the track record of running backs. So Trevor Etienne was solid, but he's gone. You've got Nate Frazier, Josh McCray, kind of a bigger 230-plus pound back coming in. Throw Cash Jones, catching passes, Bo Walker. I like the potential of this group. Maybe not as proven right now as Oklahoma, but I think Georgia will get there this year.
Yeah, I got Georgia in my top five as well. I got them number five. But here's one I noticed the magazine doesn't have it either. And again, who knows? But from what I understand, what I'm being told, Stephen, I think Dylan Bell is going to get a lot of run at running back. Now, is this one of those where they try him in fall camp and then they say, well, you know what? He's a better receiver. Kick him back out. I mean, he's going to, who knows? But I think he's going to be, or at least I've been told he's going to be primarily a running back. But again, he has spent most of his career at receiver. So I included him as a running back. Yeah. So again, number five, Nate Frazier. Yeah, I really really like Nate Frazier in his second year. I think he's a huge breakout potential, but also factoring into this, and fair or not, Steven, but I somewhat factored in the offensive line a little bit too, because if you have a dominant offensive line, I kind of put you a little bit higher on this list.
I think that's fair. And it's also, it worries me about Oklahoma, and certainly something I thought about with Georgia too, just given the amount of turnover. I have confidence that both of these staffs are going to figure it out on the offensive line, but that is something that I weighed, is trying to project, production. Does Dylan Bell, let's just say that is true and he spends most of his season at running back, doesn't that give you even more confidence that Georgia's receivers are going to be better this year too?
Oh yeah. I don't want to ruin it, but they made the top five. I'm pretty high on Georgia receivers.
Yeah. Same here. Don't want to give it away, but yeah.
All right. So who's your next running back group in the SEC?
I'm going Florida at three. I love this pairing of Jaden Baugh and Jacoby Jackson. It feels like the 1-2 punch, going back to Louisiana. Billy Napier has always had productive ground games, often two and three running backs contributing. Love the fact that Florida also has, four starters back up front. This is one of the best offensive lines in the SEC. Good set of running backs. They should be able to move the pile consistently here. With Montrell Johnson also gone, I think it's a pretty easy situation for Jaden Baugh to step into. So I think he's one of my all SEC picks for sure. Think very highly of this Florida backfield. I've got him at three.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Steve, because that was one of my bold predictions. Jaden Baugh leads the SEC in rushing touchdowns next season. I'm feeling pretty confident about that, but he may very well, if the end of last season was any indication, he may very well be the best running back in the conference. I'm not ready to anoint him just yet, but I think he's got that potential playing in this offense, run heavy. You reference the offensive line. DJ Lagway, provided he stays healthy, will keep defenses honest. I think Jaden Baugh could have a crazy year.
I agree with that. And I think that's one of the questions about the SEC this year is like, who is the number one running back in the conference? It feels like there's a lot of really solid players, but who's going to emerge? Like last year, we saw Dylan Sampson and some others emerge to be the number one, number two backs in the conference. When I was doing kind of first and second team, third team, all SEC, it feels like you could jumble these names up in a couple of different directions and you'd feel good about it either way. But it does feel like Jaden Baugh, given the offensive line opportunities, track record of head coach, losing Montrell Johnson in his 100 carries last year, it feels like he might take that mantle of the top running back in the conference.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who's your next running back group?
Mike, the top two come from the state of Texas. And if anybody wants to disagree about the order, I'm totally fine with it. This is tough. I'm going Texas A&M at two. And kind of the tiebreaker here was you've got Le'Veon Moss and Ruben Owens both coming back from injury. I do think all systems are go. They're both going to be back in good form this season. Throw in Amari Daniels and you've got one of the deepest backfields in the country. So I like Texas A&M. I got them at two. I think they're probably a top five running back group nationally.
Yeah, I put them at number one. So for everything you just said, again, offensive line, I think playing in Colin Klein's system is somewhat run heavy. When they were 7-1 not in the conference, but overall last season, they were averaging over 200 yards on the ground. So they love to run the football down there in College Station. I think they're going to do it really well this year. All according to Coach Elko, Le'Veon Moss is full go at this point in time. So you got to imagine he's going to be feeling great by the time fall camp rolls around here before we know it. So I mean, I'm not really bickering here, but I give me A&M number one, and I'm right there with you. I think I got Texas number two, number three. I had them two, and then I said, you know what? Oklahoma is a little bit deeper. So give me Texas three, but I'm splitting hairs here.
Yeah, I had these two kind of neck and neck, and honestly, it's funny to think about Texas at one, because last year, they lost C.J. Baxter before the season starts. They had kind of a rash of injuries, and yet, Trey Wisner was one of the three players who topped 1,000 yards, and he's the only 1,000-yard returning rusher in the SEC. So you add him with Jarek Gibson, you throw in C.J. Baxter when he gets back to 100%. I just like the upside here. maybe a little bit more. I have Texas at one, A&M two, but I mean, if you told me A&M deserved to be ranked ahead of them, I can't argue with you. It's neck and neck in my mind.
Good. Don't argue with me. Let's do receivers, Steven. Who is in your just missed the cut category top receiver groups in the SEC?
Two groups just missed. One of those is Ole Miss. Caden Lee, throw in all the transfers. I still think that this group is going to be fine. I think they're going to miss Trey Harris and others, but I think they will reload. Also, Florida, Eugene Wilson coming back. I like J. Michael Sturdivant, the UCLA transfer. So those two just missed. I did have A&M and Missouri on the list of intrigue for me, just given that transfers are expected to take up a big role and fill some voids for Missouri, and you've got transfers needing to step up for A&M. So those were on the intriguing. Ole Miss and Florida just missed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad you said A&M because they're on my just missed as well. Everybody I talk to, Steve, yourself included, I believe, love this KC Concepcion. And, you know, I didn't see it last year, but I just literally watched the one game they played against Tennessee. But be that as it may, I mean, I think he could be a game breaker for him. And, man, if only they would have brought back Noah Thomas, who we'll talk about here in a second. Had they brought him back, I would have put them in the top five because I just got done watching some A&M games. And, man, that guy really was starting to come on late in the year.
Yeah, I agree. And throw in Terry Bussey. I know we'll talk about tight ends, but also a pretty deep group of tight ends too. So, I mean, it feels like A&M has done what they needed to do to improve the receivers. You got somebody in Concepcion who could be a playmaker. Mario Craver can be stretched the field a little bit. Terry Bussey can also give you that playmaking ability. So I think Georgia might be the most improved group in the SEC. Texas A&M is probably not too far behind this year.
Hey, we got a super bold prediction here from the plain truth. It must be the truth because that's his name. He says, I think Ball State will beat Auburn week two. Mark it down. What is Ball State? You know, at the top of your head, Stephen, where would they rank in Athlon's magazine?
Mike, I have them ranked 11th in the MAC, and they would be one of the like 130 type teams. I have them 134 in my power rankings. So I was shaking my head on the video because if that happens, I mean, the meltdown that we're going to see on the plains is going to be pretty epic.
Who's he going to blame this time? That's all I got to ask. All right, let's get into top five receivers group in the SEC. Who's your number five, Steven?
Going to go with Georgia, Mike. I mentioned, I think a much improved group this year. I don't think we'll see the problems with drops that we saw last season. Just expecting across the board better play here. You can throw in Kobe Young, who's coming back after last year, not being on the roster. You add in Noah Thomas and Zachariah Branch. You know, looks like Branch will probably play in the slot. Noah Thomas gives you the size on the outside. Dylan Bell, London Humphreys. I like this group a lot. I got them at five, but that also says a lot about the groups I think that are going to be in front of them too. They're pretty deep.
Mm-hmm. I put them number three. Again, I think I'm biased because I just watched Noah Thomas scoring all these touchdowns on people. So really high on his potential impact. I'm very intrigued by Branch, and I don't know the story of, I think it was the LSU game. He looked like $1 million, if memory serves. Now, why he was not more productive the rest of the year, I don't know. I don't care about Southern Cal football. But
Mike, one of the unsolved mysteries of last season was why Zachariah Branch didn't go from electric playmaker as a freshman to something better as a sophomore.
I blame Lincoln Riley is clearly the case here. But yeah, if he could be that for Georgia, I mean, this is going to be one hell of a dynamic receiving group. And they'll be, I see why you got them at number five. I'm not upset about that, but I got them a little bit higher at number three.
Also, Branch very good on special teams too. So another element to his game. So I just think, the drops, the inconsistency, everything we saw last year, if you're adding guys with the big size of Thomas and Young on the outside to go with Branch at the slot, you're going to be a lot better at receiver this year.
So who's your number four position group at receiver?
Little bit of a projection. I'm going to take Texas. And a lot of this is just belief in Ryan Wingo taking the step from good freshman season to potentially all SEC, I think, this year, catching passes from the world's greatest quarterback, Arch Manning. So you throw in Ryan Wingo to go with Stanford transfer, Emmett Mosley, DeAndre Moore, also like the freshman class, whether it's French, Lockett, some of the other guys. I think this is a group that is short on experience, but also long on potential.
How about this comment from Hall of Fame College Football, Steve? The Golden Arch couldn't beat out a seventh round pick for the job, but sure, you're right, Texas boy. And I don't think he's talking to you, but I just thought that was hilarious. Excellent point. Excellent point. And I got Texas in the top five too. Come on, Steven. I'll be that. They're gonna be highly productive. Sarkisian, he's masterful at getting mismatches for his receivers. So I think that'll continue. Ryan Wingo, I've already predicted. I think he'll lead the SEC in receiving yards. That's one of my bold takes. And as soon as I said it, Steven, one of these Texas boys said, well, hell, DeAndre Moore's even better than him. So you can't even compliment Texas without them getting upset at you. But that's what it is. Yeah, this will be one of the best, I would think, in the SEC. Too much talent down in Austin. You know what?
Yeah, I think safe to say, given that they lose their top three statistical receivers, counting Gunnar Helm at tight end, I think you just have to trust Sarkisian, and you just look at what the guys they brought in from recruiting plus Sarkisian plus Manning, they're going to be fine here. Kind of like the running backs, also projecting a little bit of scheme and also quarterback talent with these two.
Mm-hmm. All right. So who is next on your list?
I've got LSU at three. And this is another group that, you know, we're splitting hairs on these groups because, man, these groups are loaded. With LSU, you get Aaron Anderson, Nick Anderson. Yes, he's got to prove he's healthy. Chris Hilton, who like exploded in the bowl game and has got big play potential if he can stay healthy for a full season. Barry and Brown coming over from Kentucky. You've got Xavion Thomas back. So it feels like all of the ingredients are there for this LSU receiving core to be deep and also very productive with Garrett Nussmeier throwing to him.
Yeah, no doubt. I got that number four. So I'm right there with you. I think Aaron Anderson is probably one of the most underrated returning players in the conference this year. I feel like a lot of people don't realize he led the Tigers in receiving yards last year, and I believe by like a wide margin. So I believe in Barry and Brown. It's fair if you don't. I know Kentucky fans are kind of over him, but I would say that's got a lot more to do with their offense and their disastrous quarterback play than it does anything else. So, yeah, number four, I probably am discounting this team. They probably deserve to be a little bit higher, and they probably will be by the end of the season.
I think with Barry and Brown, there could also be some motivation for NFL too. Like senior, you're catching passes from a guy who's going to be drafted next year. I think there's a lot of opportunity to rebound. I also think, you know, you have LSU at four. I've got them at three. I mean, realistically, they're probably top six in the country. I think that sort of just speaks to some of the other groups and kind of where they are nationally. This is a very, very good year for receivers, receiving corps in the SEC.
Right. So I you've got two left here, Steven, and I would assume they're both from Old Yellowhammer. Who are you going upset down there in the Iron Bowl?
Mike, at two, we're going with Auburn. You know, Alabama's going to end up being number one. This is a hard call. I could almost flip a coin and feel pretty good either way. Kind of the difference for me was just Brian Williams, I think, being a little bit more dynamic in his freshman season and having that All-America caliber season. I think with Auburn, I think everybody in the SEC knows how good Cam Coleman is going to – it was last year, but I think the country is going to find out how good Cam Coleman is this year. And I like Eric Singleton, the Georgia Tech transfer. I think he's going to be a star in this offense. He basically replaces Keandre Lambert-Smith. You throw in Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons, there's your top four receivers in a very, very loaded group for quarterback Jackson Arnold.
Well, I thought I hated Hugh Freeze. Come on, Steven. I'm giving Auburn number one for me, but not by much, because I've kind of go back and forth. Alabama, Auburn. And today I'm feeling Auburn number one, Alabama number two. I think the top two for Alabama is better, but I think the depth potentially a little bit better for Auburn. But again, I'm kind of splitting hairs here, and it will probably come down to which transfer gets acclimated quicker, Isaiah Horton or Eric Singleton. whoever has a better year, it'll probably result in that team having a better receiving core. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. And also, I think you could kind of look at it as Alabama with, you know, Bernard at 2, Horton at 3. That group is more veteran at this point, where Auburn is asking the next wave of those guys to step up. And I think they will. So I think that's kind of why they're 1 and 2, like a little bit more potential, maybe for Auburn, maybe for Alabama, a little bit more veterans, a little bit more play we can point to at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe let's see if I can really get you to upset some folks down there, Stephen. Well, of all the receivers on Alabama and Auburn's roster, which one is the absolute best, no, according to Stephen Lassen?
Have to still go with Ryan Williams. I'd take Cam Coleman. Yeah, it would be after that. I think it's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see what Ryan Williams did the end of the last year compared to Cam Coleman?
That's a fair criticism there. Would you have it reversed? Would you go Coleman ahead of Williams?
No, I wouldn't. Okay. I was just giving you a hard time.
I was like, whoa, man. It's like, I thought, man, it was not like I had to like start to sweat there for a minute. I was like, am I crazy here?
All right. How about top tight end groups, Steven? I don't know about you, but this one was a little bit more difficult. More challenging for me. I don't really even have a just missed group because actually I do. Yes, I do have just missed. Give me Tennessee because I think Kitzelman is very solid and I like Holden Stays, but again, or not Holden Stays,
Ethan Davis.
He's largely unproven. Holden Stays was the guy they brought in at Notre Dame, and he's gone already. But Kitzelman is solid, but he's banged up. So it's like, I can't rightly put them in the top five until we know how healthy Kitzelman is and how effective Ethan Davis can be, because he's been banged up much of his career as well.
I like that call. I didn't have Tennessee in my top five, but they were in the just missed category, largely because of Kitzelman. I think a guy who should be in consideration for all SEC honors this year, and also kind of thinking Ethan Davis takes a step forward as a sophomore. I'll throw out a couple guys, teams that just missed mine, Mike. I think Texas A&M, I like the potential with Amari Nyeblack and some of the others. It's sort of like, it's a little bit unproven. Can they do it? You know, Orstrom's also back this year. Just missed. They would probably be the sixth team in my rankings here. Jack Andres transferring from Cal to Texas. I think he's going to be an impact tight end, but a lot of still unknown for Texas after losing Gunnar Helm. And also a little tip of the cap to Mississippi State. I mean, they got Traore coming back. Max Reese transferring in from Eastern Michigan. That's a pretty solid 1-2 punch there for Mississippi State.
Whoa, well, you mentioned some A&M. Let's give Cousin Rick some love, Steven. He just gave us $100. Wow. All the way down in Costa Rica.
From Aggies.
Cousin Rick says, hola from Aggie Cousin in Costa Rica. Man, imagine the life Cousin Rick must have down here in Costa Rica here in mid-June. I'm jealous. I don't know about you, Steven.
Very jealous. I think we could, well, you want to take that SEC podcast trip? We could, you, me, Cousin Shane down to Costa Rica.
A couple more donations from Cousin Rick. We'll be down there. That's my vow.
Right. We really appreciate Cousin Rick. I think Cousin Rick also pretty happy with the, maybe the position rankings, at A&M and the running backs. We'll have some good things to say about the offensive line too.
Yep. Yeah. So this should be a really solid year for A&M. So we appreciate you, Cousin Rick. And that means unless anyone beats $100, and I don't know if that's possible, but we're going to be doing A&M on our fall camp preview series after Ole Miss, Texas, and then Texas A&M. Thanks to Cousin Rick. We appreciate you, buddy. Enjoy your vacation. Stay safe down there. All right. Top tight ends. Number five for Stephen Lassen is
Missouri.
Ooh.
Brett Norfleet, I think maybe one of the most underrated players in the SEC. Doesn't get a lot of attention. He plays tight end. Luther Burden, Theo Weiss have kind of overshadowed him in the receiving core. They picked up Vince Brown, a transfer from Colorado State. And of course, they have some other guys coming back at that position. But I like Missouri. I think it's a pretty solid top five tight end group this year.
Yeah, that's a heck of a selection, Steven. But how about this? I'm going to throw you a little curveball. How about Kentucky? Oh. I'm going to say something nice about Kentucky, Steven. Josh Caddis, Willie Rodriguez. I think this is, I think we're going to run the offense through the tight end position down in Lexington. Get back to the old power football days where we're play action and dropping it off to the tight end. Zach Calzada loves the tight end, Steven. I don't know if you've heard, and they don't have any good receivers anyway. So the tight end's got to do something in this offense. I think Kentucky's going to shock the world. Have the number five tight end group in the SEC.
That is shocking to me. Honestly, I probably would have had Kentucky kind of in that next tier after Texas A&M and Tennessee. So I am surprised to see them on your list. But Mike, Jamori Maclin. I mean, I know they lose Dane Key and Barry and Brown, but Jamori Macklin's a good receiver. We got to give Kentucky's receivers a little bit of credit here.
His job this year is just going to shield the defense away from these tight ends. So he's going to suck up all the oxygen, bring it up underneath for all those tight ends. That's what's going to happen. Sorry to break it to you, Steven.
Mark Stoops going to institute that 1990s offense that he dreams of, run and throw to tight ends, right?
All right, how about...
Is it Jimbo calling plays over there?
he's available. I know that. Who's your number four tight end group in the SEC?
Going with LSU. Bauer Sharp transferring in, Donovan Green, also Tre'Dez Green as well. I think there's some proven, there's also some potential here to go with all those receivers. If the receivers all hit, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for these LSU tight ends this year too.
Oh, no doubt, Steven. I put them a little bit higher. I put them number two. I think this is one heck of a 1-2 combo. Bauer Sharp, I think, obviously started slow at Oklahoma, but I thought he was coming on late in the season. So I think that's going to be quite the pickup, especially for an LSU team that, they're going to need some help potentially on the offensive line. And I think the court, Garrett Nussmeier, is going to be looking at these tight ends early and often next season.
Yeah, Green had that great bowl game against Baylor too. I think was it 6 catches and a couple touchdowns, and sort of giving you the confidence that he can replace Mason Taylor. And also, if any of these guys can give him anything on the blocking front, that'll be a significant boost given what they lose at tight end. So, I mean, this, if you combine receivers and tight ends, this LSU receiving core is clearly one of the best in football.
Yeah. All right. So who's next on your list, Steven?
I've got Vanderbilt at 3, largely because of one guy. It's Eli Stowers. I mean, it's just a versatile, athletic weapon for Diego Pavia. All the production last season that we saw, what he could do this year with another offseason working with Pavia and Tim Beck. So like the continuity there, like the connection that those two have had now for a while. One of my preseason All-Americans at tight end.
Yeah, I love his selection, Steven. I got Vandy number 4. I didn't put him any higher because I'm like you, because I'm basing this off of one guy. But may very well be the best tight end in the conference, maybe even the country. Eli Stowers. So, yeah, I mean, he does it all for Vanderbilt. Him alone has got to put them in this top 5. So I'll put him at number 4.
Yeah, it's hard. Kind of the age old question here is, we're doing position rankings. How much does one player weigh? And if you're a first team SEC, maybe first team All-America, I think that's kind of a pretty big check in your box to be a top, 2 or 3 tight end room in the SEC.
Yep. All right. So who you got next, Steven?
I got Ole Miss. Daquan Wright and Luke Haas, that's a pretty potent combination for Ole Miss. Certainly, they will miss Caden Prescorn, but I love the potential of this group. Haas, if he can stay healthy, and you got Daquan Wright, who had a good season last year after transferring in, there's a lot of upside for this Ole Miss tight end room.
Yeah, absolutely. I got him number 3, Lane Kiffin. He loves to use that tight end, and I think going out there and getting Luke Haas could be a game changer for Ole Miss, maybe provide some of what Prescorn did early in his career. And Wright has really come on. That was a guy I didn't know who in the heck he was till he started making plays for the Rebels. But Ole Miss, I think, is at their peak under Lane Kiffin when they got 2 tight ends on the field that they trust. And so, yeah, I got Ole Miss very high on this list.
even more important this year, given what they lose at receiver. I mean, and I think both of us, we probably like Caden Lee as maybe a guy to be all SEC and one of those teams. But Haas and Wright make up for a lot of what you might have preseason concerns about some of the turnover at receiver.
Mm-hmm. So I believe we are at number one, Stephen, and I bet we have the same one.
Mike, I've got Georgia. I think this was a pretty easy call, wasn't it? Lawson Lucky and Oscar Delp, but 1-2 at tight end. That's pretty hard to beat.
It's tight end you down there in Athens now. You know what?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, throw in the receivers. I mean, Gunnar Stockton's not hurting for weapons this year, right?
No, without a doubt. And I think we just inspired Free Durden. Stephen, he just became a member of the channel Free. Welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
I know he's been a longtime supporter, so we appreciate you, buddy. And I know he's going to love that Georgia's got the best tight end room in the conference. But yeah, I mean, I think getting Oscar Delp, keeping him away from the NFL, that'll be huge. Lawson Luck, he's a guy that ever since he set foot on campus, you know, he's been billed as the next great tight end. So I think in Mike Bobo's offense with Gunnar Stockton, I think both these guys are going to be highly productive this fall. I really do think. And I think that's going to suit Georgia well.
I do too. Also to, I mean, it's sort of a cliche, but a good safety valve for your young quarterbacks. Gunnar Stockton, I think we know he's going to be the starter, but a receiver group that's got some new faces, maybe it takes some time to gel. You can just check it down to those tight ends and know those two guys are going to be open and probably a good safety valve.
How do you buddy? He's throwing up, Stephen, because you're showing some non-SEC helmets back here.
We'll fix that for next week's show. About that.
Yeah. Don't let it happen again. All right, so last position group here is, of course, offensive line. Anybody just missed the cut for you, Stephen?
One team actually just missed the cut. And actually, I wanted to bring this up. I don't know if you felt the same way I did, but I got to six and I was like, oh, there's a lot of questions with this group. Like I thought about this like exiting spring practice, but I think there's even more. Is that fair?
Oh, I think without a doubt. I mean, I was kind of, quite honestly, I was struggling. And I basically have four through, I included two, just missed the cut, but four through six, essentially interchangeable in my mind.
I have kind of a similar, I felt there were six that were a cut above the rest of the conference. And then there's like a host of teams like LSU, Tennessee, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, like wondering contenders, what do they get out of these groups because of all those questions? I think that's kind of like the intrigue for me after you get past the top six. Auburn was the one that just missed for me at number six.
Yeah, I've got them in the just missed category. I know they bring back a lot of production. They bring in a transfer that apparently is supposed to be pretty solid and slide right in as a potential starter. So maybe this is the year, but I don't know. Offense was, again, and I don't even know if that was all their fault because they were able to clearly run the ball. But again, we don't have to rehash everything Auburn did wrong. Everybody knows by this point in time. But I also have Georgia in there. I'm not giving Georgia the benefit of the doubt. I know they got all the talent in the world, but I put Georgia in the just missed because they got to prove it to me.
Mike, I have Georgia at five, actually. And
I know you. You're bought in. Yeah, you're bought in.
That's right. I had to buy into track record and talent. And I just kind of figured Georgia, much like some of these other contenders, yeah, they got some turnover, but I'm gonna bank on Kirby Smart, Mike Bobo, the rest of that staff. And I think there's some pieces you feel good about how fast they come together. What it looks like, I think that's a question, but I'll take Georgia's talent and take a gamble and put them at five.
Okay. Hey, Cousin Shane is in the comments. Cracker Barrel must have closed early. He says, hey, I thought I had the wrong channel when I saw those trash helmets behind. He says, oh, man, you're getting buried with these helmets now.
I'd rather get complaints about the helmets and the rankings. So that's why I put those up there, just to distract everybody tonight.
Okay, I put number five, and maybe I'm just buying into the hype like everybody else, Steven. I put Texas there with DJ Campbell coming back. Our guy, Bobby Burton on Texas said, hey, the breakout star of this team is going to be Trevor Goosby, who he stepped in late last season and Man, there was no drop off, and they lost a first round pick. So again, there's a lot of inexperience here for Texas, but their recent track record, you know, they have really developed some great linemen down there. I think they're in the midst of doing it again.
Mike, I've got Texas at 4.
Okay.
Some of this is largely due to just track record with Kyle Flood. You know, I think he's one of the best offensive line coaches in college football. Talent, you know, you look at someone like Brandon Baker, you mentioned Trevor Goosby. If those guys develop, you got two bookends at tackle. And then you throw in the interior where you've got some experience with Hudson at center, Campbell at guard. I could see this group coming together quickly. So I know it's a little bit of a projection. It's a little bit of potential. There's not a lot of experience coming back, but this also kind of plays into like what Georgia is like. I just trust talent and I trust track record here at this position.
Mm-hmm. All right. So number 4, I've got Stephen, Mizzou. Come on down. That's another one. Speaking of potential All-American, Caden Green, Connor Tolleson's solid. Some question marks around those guys, but man, Missouri has developed a ton of good offensive and defensive linemen, and that's why a big reason why they've been so successful in recent seasons. But I think Missouri is going to surprise some people with the production they get on their offensive line this fall. What's your thoughts on that?
Mike, I had them a little bit lower. Like I had Auburn at 6. I think Missouri would kind of fall in that next tier with like the LSU and Tennessee's. I think Caden Green should be a preseason All-American. I think it, you know, Connor Tolleson could be All-SEC for me. I am curious, like he did suffer that knee injury late last year. Like how close to 100% will he be and play up to his potential by the time we get to kickoff? But I think there definitely is a track record, plus like some of the transfers they brought in at the tackle spots. Like you could easily see this group turning over 3 starters and just reloading. So I would have them in the next tier. I did not have them in my top 5, but I do trust Drinkwitz and the staff to figure it out.
Mm. Okay, so who do you got? Where are we at on your list? Number 3?
Number 3. I am taking more potential, more hype, and I'm hoping it banks on, turns into production by ranking Alabama at 3. So you throw in Jaden Roberts, Caden Proctor, Parker Brailsford. I think this group, yes, they're 2 new starters. Yes, they may not have lived up to the potential. They've got room to play better. But second year of this offense, too much talent, too many individual solid pieces. I'll go Alabama at 3.
Yeah, that's right where I have them as well for all the reasons that you said. I think, and this is maybe not fair for a rankings like this, but year 2 of this system, I think that could really help, not obviously all the players, but really offensive line continuity. I know it's a new offensive coordinator, but same system and everything like that. And Ryan Grubb actually, to my knowledge, has a background coaching the offensive line as well. So I think all that together could really help this offensive line.
Do you also... would you also maybe buy into like Ty Simpson or Russell or Austin Mack being maybe a little bit more rhythm based in a passing game too? So that way, as you know, Jalen Milroe's strengths, you know, kind of maybe he's like the deep ball, the plays break down, he can kind of scramble. Like with Ty Simpson, it's like you're going 5-step drop, you're getting rid of it. Like those guys kind of know maybe a little bit better what to expect up front. Does that make sense?
No, I certainly think so. So yeah, and we have seen that in college football in recent years, you know, where like the linemen don't know, is it a run? Is it a pass? And I can't imagine trying to block in that scenario.
I totally agree. And I think that plus second year of offensive line coach, better coordinator, Kalen DeBoer second year, I think this group is bound to take a step forward. And also like, Vandermark and Formby both played a lot last year. So it's a matter of just them playing better and starting roles now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Who is your number 2 offensive line, Steven?
The Florida Gators. 4 starters back. I think Jake Slaughter could be the best center in college football. They only gave up 13 sacks in SEC play last season. So a lot to like about their ability to move the pile in the run game. Pass protection for DJ Lagway, especially key, given some of the injury concerns going into this year. I just like this group a lot. I've got them 4th. I got them 2nd in the SEC. I think they'll be a top 5 offensive line potentially in college football this year.
Yeah, that's exactly where I got them as well, Steven. Number 2 in the conference. And Cousin Shane's rolling over on his lawn chair right now. Can't say one nice thing about the Florida Gators without that man losing it. But this is Billy Napier's DNA all over. This is what he wants to be: ground and pound and run the ball. And, you know, one time, I've said this before, it's just hilarious. It stuck with me, Stephen, but it doesn't matter if they're playing, Florida State, Georgia, or if they're playing Southern Miss or Southern Indiana. Billy Napier wants it to be a one score, 20 to 24 type win. I don't think he believes in blowouts. You know what I mean? So he is ground and pound, shorten the game, get the heck out of there and try to get the win. But I think it sets up very, very well for his style is to have a potentially elite offensive line like this.
Absolutely. It was that way at Louisiana too. Like even in the Sun Belt, there was a lot of close games that he played. So stylistically, it's maybe it gives you a little bit too much anxiety or heartburn if you're a Florida fan. But I think, with the offensive line, the experience and Lagway's growth, we mentioned Jaden Ball, you throw in the receivers. Maybe there's a potential for this offense to be a little bit more dynamic this year.
Yeah, if anybody wants to have some fun, you can look this up. Yeah, don't quote me verbatim on these statistics, but when Napier was at Louisiana, he had some insane, 18-3 or 21-3 in one score game. So I was like, by God, this guy can coach. Then he gets to Florida and he's 1-9 in his first 10 one score games. So I don't know what happened there, but he lost the touch. All right. So number one, offensive line in the SEC, Steven, I think we got the same one.
Cousin Rick's going to be happy with this one, Mike, as we're going Texas A&M at one, all five starters back. I love the setup, the culture, Mike Elko and this offensive staff with Colin Klein. It's pretty clear they are trying to build a bully with this offensive line and run game. You've got your pieces back. Reed Adams could be one of the top guards in the country. Zune at tackle. And also you get Mark Naboo back at center, who was hurt most of last season. So I just like the way this group played and the identity and the pieces they bring back. They are my number one line in the SEC.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right where I went as well, Stephen. And I think this will be key to potentially A&M. Finally, Stephen, finally. I'm not predicting it because I'll never predict it again until it actually happens. But maybe this will be the year they break out and reach the promised land and get over 8-4. I think it'll be led by the offensive line. That's the way they were churning out wins 2 months into the season, last season, and I think they're poised to do it again this fall.
Really fascinated to see early in the season when they play Notre Dame on September 13th in South Bend, because these are Notre Dame's offensive line might be top five in the country again. You had in a Notre Dame defense losing some pieces, and if Texas A&M can use that ground game to go into South Bend, push Notre Dame around, get a big victory, all of a sudden we're probably talking about Texas A&M. If they can do that, they probably beat Auburn. They beat Mississippi State. They go into that Florida game undefeated. So the identity and the foundation, much like we talked about in our anonymous coach scouting, coaches are pretty high on what Mike Elko is doing. We'll have to see if it shows in the results this year.
Brodo says, great O-line, still going 8-4. Yeah. That's not me, Cousin Rick. That's freaking Brodo here. I may ban him if he ever says something like that again. But all right, hey Steven. So hey, normally we go 90 minutes with you, but I know you need some time off. You were just telling me you need a vacation. One last thing, maybe before we go. Come on, Steven, you got to stop saying every quarterback could be the best quarterback in the country. Says Titers, back in Bama.
No, that's Arch Manning.
He's president of the Arch Fan Club. Someone did ask, Stephen, when we were talking at the beginning of the Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine, that they asked, did Arch get to proofread it before you sent it to the printer? So can you clarify that? And one more time, can you clarify where's the best place to get to Athlon Sports College Football Preview magazine?
I can confirm Arch did not see it. He did not proofread it. He did not edit it. He did not do the rankings. That was all me. So if anything goes wrong, you can always blame me. I will say on the quarterbacks, Mike, I think Lagway, Sellers, Nussmeier, Manning, hopefully I'm not missing anybody. I would have them all in my top eight or so. So I'm expecting a pretty good year for quarterbacks in the SEC. Apologize for maybe if I overuse that best term tonight. But
don't forget the forgotten man, Diego Pavia.
Oh, yeah. He's another probably, you know, what, top 10, 15-ish this year. So a lot of intrigue for me about Mateer and Simmons and Gunnar Stockton. So I think there's definitely a clear divide after those top ones. But if you want to pick up a copy of the magazine, athlonsports.com, best place to get it. It's at the very top. There's a link. It says magazines. Takes you to our online store. You can get your copy ordered. I think we're starting to sell out of some of our covers. So if you want one of those SEC covers, I'd highly recommend going there. Publix and bookstores looks like the best place if you want to get it on the physical newsstand right now.
All right. And then as soon as we end this, Stephen, I'll put a link in the comments. I'll pin it to this video. If you want to get your own Athlon Sports magazine, I'll provide a link there. But can't thank you enough, Stephen, for all you do for this show. We really appreciate you. We appreciate your time. That's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back with Cousin Shay tomorrow to preview the Ole Miss Ball Camp preview series. So that rages on. We appreciate each and every one of you. We'll catch you tomorrow.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.